Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 56, is Agrahya, which means one who is ungraspable. In Sanskrit, as in English, the word grasp means to physically grab someone, and it also means to understand. Usually in English, that's used in a negative sense. I couldn't quite grasp what you're saying. It means I can't understand. So, Krishna cannot be understood. He's beyond the range of understanding. Yato vacho nivartante aprapyo manasa saha. He cannot be described through speech and cannot be reached by the mind. This agrahya means it cannot be physically grasped, cannot be controlled, cannot be acted upon by anyone or anything. Nainam urdvang natiranchyam namadde parijagrabhat. One cannot grasp in the vertical dimension or in the horizontal dimension or in the third dimension, or if you can think of any other dimensions, you wouldn't be able to get in there either. Of course, Krishna can be understood to some extent by bhakti. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhu matah sarvang pravartite iti matva bhajante maang buddha bhavasamanvitaha. I am the source of everything. Everything is generated from me. Those who accept this, those who think like this, those who agree to this statement, iti matva, they worship me, Krishna says, with their intelligence and with feeling. So the modern, well, it's not really modern, it's going on since practically the creation, the idea that we can understand everything simply by our intelligence is not the way to understand Krishna. The idea that we'll be simply empirically, in a completely neutral manner, whatever we see, touch, taste, smell, feel, hear, whatever we can measure, that we accept to be real. The Mr. Spock of Star Trek approach. No feelings, just logic, so-called logic. But actually, even to understand what they call science, you have to have some feeling for it, isn't it? Unless you have some desire, or some people, they have an attraction to that. And that they, because they have an attraction to it, then they feel inclined to study it and understand it. So even to understand any subject, you have to have some feeling for it. Even if you philosophically profess to not have any feeling, it's just logic. But then why is, just like these atheists, they say, well, atheist means they say there's no God. And then why are they so busy studying science and everything? Then what's the meaning of anything? Why should they bother studying anything? If there's no God, there's no meaning to anything. That means so. Actually, I read this rascal Dawkins, what's that book, The God Delusion? Not very impressive book, as you can imagine, but it's had a lot of influence. So he dealt with that question. Then what's the meaning in life if there's no God? And he said, he was discussing that with some of his friends when he was taking lunch in a pub, And they said, well, what's the meaning? Well, we're going to have a good lunch. And we had a good lunch. Sense gratification. Kimanyat kama haitukam. What else is there but lust? What else is there? That's meaning. Or as the great philosopher John Lennon said, I just believe in me. And he qualified that by saying, Yoko and me, that's reality. You ever heard that song? I heard it once. Even before, I mean anyone would say, it's just incredibly egoistical. But he was just voicing what everyone thinks. His long song was on for about 20 minutes. I don't believe in Hitler. Da, 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 da. I don't believe the Bible. Da, 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 da. He goes on and on and on and all these things that you could believe in, he doesn't believe in. And then he comes up with a conclusion. I just believe in me. Yoko and me. That's reality. He came face to face with reality one morning in the form of a bullet which destroyed everything that he considered to be me, including his rotting bag of bones. So that's also inconceivable. I mean, what to speak of Krishna being inconceivable? The foolishness of the conditioned souls who refuse to accept Krishna is also inconceivable. I mean, they're just like this Dawkins, he's like on a campaign going all over the world to promote atheism. Now, why is he bothered? If there's no God, then, just sit at home and, watch your toenails grow or something. What is there to do in the world? Because people are getting misled. Yeah, so what? What does it matter? What does it matter if they get misled? There's God, no God, what does it matter? Nothing matters. If there's no ultimate basis to anything, what does it matter? So one who has feeling for Krishna, then he lets them understand him to the extent that he may be understood. Because except for Krishna, no one can really fully understand anything. Yeah, I mean, even anything. You could study anything your whole life. I saw a TV program many years ago about two professors at Oxford University that spent 10 years studying 1 acre of wooded land. And it's just studying everything in it. But I mean, even if you understand, if you study one insect or even the eye of an insect, you can never come to the end of studying it. There's no end. What to speak of Krishna? How can we understand? But he can be grasped to some extent by those who have feeling for him. Those who are ready to accept that, yes, he is supreme. Others, they read Bhagavad Gita, and by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have Bhagavad Gita as it is. And everything is very clear when Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavaha, everything, I generate everything, I am the source of everything. Then it's very clear, it's not difficult for us to understand that Krishna is the source of everything. But for people who are envious of Krishna, they read the same thing, the same words, they may be excellent Sanskrit scholars, and the fact that Krishna is saying aham, which is a very simple word to understand, they misinterpret it. I mean, it's absurd, isn't it? If I say to you, I am hungry, and then you go to someone else and say that, well, Bhakti Vikas told me that I am hungry, meaning the person who's speaking. Oh, I am hungry. Oh, yeah, oh, okay, I'm hungry. Oh, I see. All right. I go to someone and say, I'm hungry. And then he says, don't worry, I'm just going to go and eat my meal. The person you're speaking to, he takes I to me. I mean, no one does that. Only people who want to interpret Bhagavad Gita in an absurd way do that. Otherwise, no one would ever take it when someone says I to mean the person that you're speaking to. And how can they understand if they're deliberately stupid? Just like the Mayavadis, they also recite this Vishnu Sahasranama, and they also give commentaries, they may do, and explain it. But, and they'll explain, Vishnu is supreme. There are so many names of Vishnu, which in this Vishnu Sahasranama, which means supreme. They'll explain like that, and it sounds very nice. It is very nice if they say who's supreme. But it's not nice them saying it, because in their minds, or the explicitly also, they will state that actually Vishnu is supreme, says here. But what that means, you have to give an interpretation, the inner esoteric meaning is that actually Vishnu is the supreme manifestation of the ultimate, which is impersonal. So they may be very good scholars, and even very good followers of Vedic culture, very adherent to the rules and regulations. They may seem to praise Vishnu, but ultimately they're foolish because they do not recognize his absolute position. His when he says supreme, that means supreme. Mataparataram nanyat kinchid asti dhananja. How explicit this statement is. Nothing is superior to me. Nothing, not even slightly. But they misinterpret and misunderstand. So they may seem, it may seem that the Mayavadis, that they're also discussing Vishnu, and they also have bhakti, and in their own minds they have bhakti, but for them, bhakti is something that aids on the way to understanding that you are supreme. And then when you become supreme, then you encourage bhakti. When you realize that you're supreme, you encourage bhakti so that everyone can understand how great you are. Rascal, hit them on the head. Actually, we should follow parampara. Prabhupada said, kick them in the face, not hit them on the head. So better to stick to the parampara system. Kick in the face with boots, to be precise. So the Mayavadis, they cannot grasp Krishna, either conceptually, which means that Krishna wants to be grasped. Krishna is the supreme personality. He's most personal, which means that physically grasped, just like Mother Yashoda, she grasps, she holds Krishna, she holds him tight, and Krishna likes that. He is ungraspable, but he is fully graspable by the devotees, the boys who are playing with Krishna. They have a game. Who will chase after Krishna? See who can catch him first. So though he's ungraspable to the material mind and senses and beyond the reach of understanding of non-devotees, the highest perfection of life is to grasp Krishna and be grasped by him. And of course, in the Sringara Rasa, then he's embracing the gopis and Radharani. We should not tell them that Krishna cannot be grasped. They will not be very pleased to hear that. So this name is similar to several names within Vishnu Sahasranama, just as similar to Aprameya, which has already been given, which means that it's not possible to measure Krishna or to give any precise description of him. He's not an object of this world that can be measured. There are so many ways you can measure distance from the nano spectrum to the, well, actually in Vedic culture they have numbers which go up to huge. There are numbers which in Western languages they don't go so high. Million was probably the biggest, and then billion, then trillion, then quadrillion. But there are numbers we'll find in Vedic mathematics. There are numbers for which there are words for numbers like 10 to the power of 20 or something like this. That means that they were, at least in the field of mathematics and especially in astronomy, they were using such words. I mean, you don't have a word for 10 to the power of 20 because you don't often use such a word. Just like Eskimos, so we're told, in their languages they have 20 words for snow because they're all different kinds of snow which they recognize. But we just say snow because we don't have such a nuanced understanding, or we're not so familiar with the subject. So in Vedic mathematics, because they're very, very high numbers, they have names for them. There's Arbud is, I think, 10 billion, and there's Padma, and all, I don't know, I'm not sure. So that means that at least among mathematicians and astronomers, actually that's a standard part of Vedic education. Jyotish, which means astronomy, which includes high-level mathematics. So those terms were there. So we can measure from very small distance to very great distance. We can measure time. We can measure weight. We can measure intensities of various energies and rays. But we cannot measure Krishna. Nor is there any, although Shastra gives Pramana, anyway, I already discussed that name, so I won't go into it now, but this is a similar name to, that Krishna cannot be grasped, he cannot be measured, cannot be quantified, but he can, by bhakti. When we find all these, there are many names which begin with a, just like here, agrahya. Ungraspable, aprameya, immeasurable. So in all these names which begin with a, which means a negativization, we can remove the a and say that he is whatever's being negativized. He can be grasped, he can be measured by bhakti. So actually by these names, they glorify bhakti. They glorify Vishnu and they simultaneously glorify bhakti by emphasizing the total impossibility of having any approach to Krishna except through bhakti. And by bhakti, he who is ajita, unconquerable, becomes totally conquered. This is particularly the understanding of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. As Srila Prabhupada sometimes said, the devotees do not want to become one with Krishna. They become more than Krishna. But not in the competitive sense that of the demons who want to become more than Krishna, but they become more than Krishna in the sense that they overwhelm him with bhakti, smother him with love, so that he is obliged to act as they please. This is the secret of bhakti. or an understanding of Vishnu Sahasranama that the standard commentators have not expressed. So another understanding of this name, Agrahya, or another perspective, on it, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emphasizes the cornerstone of his teachings, we are not the seer, we are to be seen. We are not the, it is not that Krishna is the object of our vision, we are the object of his vision. So, yeah, so that's the point. In this way, then, yet chakshushana pashyati yena chakshunshi pashyanti tadeva brahma tvam vidhi. One should understand that Brahman is that which cannot be seen by the eyes, but because of which the eyes can see other things. You got that? That's a description of Brahman. Brahman cannot be seen by the eyes, but that the eyes can see anything is only due to Brahman. So this is the kind of description of Brahman which is there in the Upanishads. So Krishna can be perceived. This point should be emphasized in discussing this name, Agrahya, one who cannot be grasped. Krishna can be grasped. One can embrace Krishna, but not by persons who want to perceive him with their gross senses. It's not that by going to a college and getting a, you can do a university degree in South Asian studies or something like this, and you'll write, or Krishna is a tribal god who got identified with the Vedic god Vishnu. This is a standard nonsensical rascal theory that's taught in the universities. So you can understand nothing about Krishna by thinking like this, by thinking, I know about Krishna. He's a tribal god who got identified with the Vedic deity Vishnu. And you think you understand Krishna. You see, I understand. You see all these people on the street. They don't know about Krishna. These Hare Krishna people, they're just fanatic. They don't understand about Krishna. I have a PhD. I understand about Krishna. But they've marched backwards. They're not only do they not understand, but they have in an offensive way, they have marched in the wrong direction. They've gone further away from Krishna. They think they know more about Krishna, but they've gone further away from Krishna, because most people don't even know anything about him. But what they know is just some bizarre theory, which to them seems very plausible. You see, we have all this evidence and inscriptions and all this kind of thing, and we worked it out. But they cannot understand Krishna. How can Krishna be understood? Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahyam Indriyai Sevon Mukhehi Jivado Swayameva Spurati Adaha. The name, form, qualities, pastimes, and everything else about Krishna. Nabhaved Grahyam. See, this word comes Grahyam. Krishna is Agrahya. He cannot be understood by the senses. This means in this context, the blunt material senses. But the same senses, when they're purified by devotional service, sevan mukhe hi jivado swayameva spuratiyada, then when we develop the sense of service to Krishna, then we won't have to go looking for Krishna. Krishna will personally reveal himself to us. The similar verse, iha yasya hare das, you know, that's what's that? Sarvo padivinir muktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchita. That when one is purified, when one no longer identifies with the designations of this material world, then by engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses, that is bhakti. So the senses can grasp Krishna. We can see Krishna, touch Krishna, taste Krishna, feel Krishna, smell Krishna, kiss Krishna. If this, by purified senses, but by the senses which, manasharshtan indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. The senses, they group around the mind, and for a mind that is committed to sense gratification, is committed to the wrong understanding that I am the enjoyer of this material world, then Krishna cannot be understood, only by purified senses. Pantastu koti shatavatsara sampragamyo vayora tapi manasomuni pungavanam sopyasti yat prapadesinya vinchintya tatve govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Even the great yogis who are very controlling their senses, they know that the uncontrolled senses are the source of entanglement in this material world, so they go through great endeavor to control their senses and become purified. But even they cannot approach Krishna, even in many, many millions of years, because their approach to doing so is incorrect. First of all, mostly they don't even look for Krishna. They don't even think that Krishna's very important. They think that their own realization is important. But Krishna, by such a method of purification, Krishna cannot be found because he's beyond the limit of simply negation of the senses. He is avinchintya tattva. Even if they're very good thinkers and good philosophers, but Krishna is beyond the scope of understanding of materialistic people. And the Mayavadis, they're also materialistic in the sense that they think that realization means simply to negate material life. They have no spiritual positive idea. So how can Krishna be understood? That they want to perform austerities and control their breath and become very good philosophers and very calm in their mind. And how will they understand Krishna, who's stealing the clothes of the gopis? And stealing, but he's got butter smeared all over his mouth. How will they understand Krishna? They cannot understand. He's beyond the scope of their understanding. Therefore, nāhaṁ prakāśa sarvasya yogamaya samāvṛta mūrho yaṁ nābhijānāti loko māma jamavīyam. Krishna is not manifest to everyone. People who are foolish and who think that spiritual realization means simply negation of all pleasure cannot understand Krishna, who is enjoying ananda chinmaya. What is that? Ananda chinmaya rasa. Ananda chinmaya rasat mataya manasu. Yat praninang patipalan smaratam upeja. Lilayatena bhuvanani jayatya jasra. Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. He who is beyond the misery of this material world, who's enjoying ananda chinmaya rasa, it's not very translatable, spiritual blissful juice, conquers over this world by his blissful pastimes. So agrahya, we should, on hearing this name, agrahya, Krishna cannot be grasped, the devotees should be very eager to grasp Krishna. Not to take it that Krishna is in all senses not to be grasped. Some people might take this to be a almost blasphemous to say this, as if to prove Vishnu Sahasranama wrong. But even the speaker of this, Bhishma Dev, of course this Vishnu Sahasranama is eternal, but he is known as the speaker of it in recent times. Recent times means only 5,000 years ago he spoke this. So he himself was living proof how Krishna can be grasped. That because of Bhishma's bhakti for Krishna, even though he was lying down on the bed of arrows and apparently incapacitated, then how could he grasp anything? How could he couldn't go anywhere, he couldn't chase after Krishna, but drawn by the love of Bhishma Dev, Krishna personally came to him and was in his range of vision as he left this world. So Bhishma, he grasped Krishna in his mind. He grasped him in his eyes. Krishna, Bilvamangala Thakur, similarly, he was blind, and the little boy in Vrindavan used to come and tease him and play with him, and then he would, as he was teasing, and the old man Bilvamanga would try to catch him, and Krishna would run away and laugh. And in this, so Bilvamanga would say, "You can run away from my hand, but you cannot run away from my heart, because I've captured you there." So Krishna is a captive. He's tied up, pranaya rasana. He's tied up by the ropes of love of his devotees. He's a captive. He who cannot be grasped at all is completely arrested. That's why it's said that Krishna, he never leaves Vrindavan. But you see, it says in Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes, there are so many pastimes of Krishna. But actually he could not leave because he is in the hearts of his, he is the heart of his devotees. Sadhavo hridayo mahyam sadhu nang hridayam tvaham madanyate na jananti nahang te bhyo managapi. This Durvasa Muni couldn't understand why he, a great brahmana and a great yogi, who had given a just punishment to this Ambarish, who was just, you know, a householder, a kshatriya, and he offended Durvasa, and Durvasa had given him, he wanted to give him just punishment, but as a result, Durvasa had to run all over the universe, and no one wanted to give him shelter, not Shiva, not Brahma, and he went to Narayan. Even Narayan didn't want to give him shelter. Durvasa couldn't understand it. Why? What's the whole universal order has become upset. If I call a demon to kill someone, the demon should kill them. What's going on here? But he didn't understand the actual principle of dharma, which is that the devotees are the heart of Krishna. Krishna is the heart of the devotees because they know nothing but him and he knows nothing but them. So that is Krishna. He, in that sense, he's also agrahya. The devotees, they cannot grasp him because they've already captured him. So why they've already got him? So they're not looking for him. They already caught him. They already got him. He can't get away. So there's the police chief. He doesn't tell the constables, go and arrest this person if he's already arrested. So Krishna is already arrested in the heart of the devotees. But at the same time, they're also looking for him. Hey Radhe Vrajadevike Chalalite Hey Nanda Suno Kuta. They're always looking for him as if they haven't got him. That's a great mystery also. That they want to find him. They want to catch him. They're always looking for him. But Srila Prabhupada described they're always in the mood that I couldn't get Krishna. They're always looking for him. Although they've got him, but they feel as if we don't have him. Because that eagerness, their eagerness to attain Krishna is such that they're always looking for Krishna. So these are some points about the name Agrahya. Ungraspable. By the eagerness to grasp him, he may be grasped. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyatam yadi katopi labhyate tatra lolyam apimulyam ekalam janma koti sukritayana labhyate. That Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati. One that means the consciousness which is saturated with feelings of the sweet juice of pure devotion to Krishna, Krishna bhakti. If you can get that, Rupa Goswami says, somehow or other, somewhere or other, by whatever means, one should try to get that. And what is the means? The only means is by intense greed. That's the only means. Not by even millions of lifetimes of mundane pious activities. One cannot attain Krishna. So by millions of lifetimes of pious activities, mundane pious activities, one cannot attain Krishna. But if one has a very strong desire to attain him, then one can do so. So this is the means to catch him, who is otherwise uncatchable. There's also the commentary of the acharyas description of Kala the Yavana, who was chasing Krishna. Krishna was running away. But Kala could never catch him. How can you catch Krishna? chasing, but he couldn't catch Krishna. The materialists, they judge Krishna to be a material person. Therefore, they give interpretations like that, that Krishna was some tribal god who became identified with the Vedic god Vishnu. And materially, Jarasandha, similarly, he chasing Krishna and Balaram, they ran up a mountain. He then set the mountain on fire, and then, they must have burned to death. It's not a logical conclusion. That Krishna and Balaram will never burn, and they'll never die, wasn't within his range of understanding. And the fact that they jumped off the mountain, even though it was 88 miles high, that also was not within Jarasandha's range of reasoning. So they cannot judge Krishna. They see Krishna and Balaram, two young boys. Who are they? Who are these young boys? This, in the wrestling arena of Kamsa, this Chanura and Mushtika, they were pitted against Krishna and Balaram, and it looks like it's an unfair fight. See, these are big, huge, trained wrestlers, and these are just some little boys. It's an unfair fight. And it looked like there was no hope for the little boys, but the little boys were not ordinary little boys, as Chanura and Mushtika soon found out. In the wrestling, they were able to grasp Krishna. That was the perfection of their wrestling art. They practiced all their life as wrestlers, and all the techniques, and eating lots of food and becoming very strong, and the perfection of their life was to wrestle, which was also their death, was to wrestle with Krishna and then be killed. But that's not so good as the young boys who are the friends of Krishna in Vrindavan, and they wrestle with Krishna, but they don't die. That is, they're living with Krishna, and sometimes they defeat Krishna in wrestling also. How can you defeat Krishna? It's not possible. But they think they defeat him. So in that sense, they also didn't grasp him, because they also didn't understand that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they did understand him, yes, as this supremely blissful person. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead? No, they didn't understand. So all these topics are inconceivable. Any question about this?
Why is the positive name not given, like
Grahya?
Yeah.
Well, it is, in some cases, just like there's that verse, the unconquerable is conquered, that I was quoting yesterday. Sthane sthita shurigatang tanuvang manobi ye prayasho jijititopi apitai strilokya. If one simply stays in one position and dedicates oneself, mind, body and soul, to hearing about Krishna humbly, this jnane prayasam udapasyan namanta eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya vartam. So then he can conquer he who is otherwise unconquerable in all the three worlds. Why is it put like this? Well, why not? for persons in this material world, why is it said in the negative way, agrahya, aprameya, and not in the positive way? Well, for us, from our perspective down here in this dark material world, he is agrahya. That is a fact. And the mystery of bhakti is not revealed to everyone. That it is a secret is what makes it all the more relishable. Raja vidya raja guhyam. It's the most secret of all secrets. It's nahaṁ prakāśa sarvasya. I'm not revealed to everyone, Krishna says. Not everyone can understand Krishna. So that's the point being made by this negative name, that not everyone can understand Krishna. So it's grahya. If we just say the name grahya, which means understandable, then to the common understanding, if of course Krishna is grahya by bhakti, he's understandable by bhakti. But if we just say grahya without qualifying it, then we may think he's, well, just like anyone else. I can see the tree, I can see the lake, I can see other people, and so Krishna, then that puts Krishna in the same category as everyone else. But only he is agrahya. Everyone and everything else is understandable, measurable, perceivable, but Krishna is not. That's the difference. Anything else? Yeah.
You mentioned about the university, PhDs or whatever, who study Krishna.
Those who study in the university, they study Krishna.
I've seen in recent years the many devotees going to
Many devotees study in university. Also,
And also, actually, many booklets, maybe not many, but some of the booklets are being printed for the devotees, written by some of the materialistic scholars. So,
Books written for devotees by materialistic scholars. Oh, by devotees for...
Written by non-devotee scholars about Krishna.
There are so many, yeah.
But they are printed by the devotees.
Oh, is it?
For the devotee audience. As if to help maybe in some understanding or maybe...
Like what?
It's happened in Poland. They have some magazine and they attach some booklet sometimes.
I see. Well...
And could you just comment on the...
Well, you've just told me something which happened in Poland, which in a very vague way, so I don't really know very much about it, but the general prescription is a Vaishnava mokhod girnam putam hari katamritam shravara naiva kartavya sarpo chishtam yatapaya. One should, even though topics of Krishna are just like nectar, one should not hear them from non-devotees, just as one should not take milk which is touched, or which is the milk remnants of a snake, because it's become poisonous. That's the general prescription. Srila Prabhupada very clearly states in many places, but in one Bhagavad Gita purport, he states that Krishna cannot be... University degrees are not helpful. One cannot be understood by academic qualifications. It's a clear point to understand. It's a basic principle of bhakti. That by mere intellectualism, one cannot understand Krishna. Not that intellectualism is rejected. Intellectualism reaches its perfection in Krishna consciousness. The greatest intellects are devotees, like Jiva Goswami, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya. So intellectualism is not rejected, but mundane intellectualism is.
Presented sometimes that Prabhupada wanted devotees to go to the universities as well and study, and just if you take the scientific audience in this way, and this is what's happening, and this is how it's presented. So,
is it? Well, we'll have to judge by the result. Phalena parichyate. Srila Prabhupada made PhDs into committed devotees. At least the Surub Damada Maharaj and Richard Thompson, Sadaputa. At that time, Sadaputa was an MSc. Later, he did his PhD. So, let's see some more. That's a good test of our university preaching, that the professors become devotees. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Agrahya Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. Krishna is agrahya, ungraspable to the impersonalists, because they do not want to conceive of the absolute as tangible. They want to imagine that the ultimate reality is without form. So you can't grasp something. You can't touch anything without form. And that's how they like it. And that's how they want to deny Krishna's superiority, Krishna's being the absolute truth. And thus, although they may praise Vishnu and recite the Vishnu Sahasranam, but ultimately they deny Vishnu's personality as being supreme. So they prefer to live in a world of vagueness, and thus Krishna manifests himself to them as such, and they cannot taste the rasa of sweet exchange with Krishna, chasing after Krishna to catch him, massaging him, embracing him. They're denied that sweet exchange with Krishna because they prefer to imagine the absolute to be intangible. And in this way, they prefer to think that they themselves are on the same level as Krishna, because if the absolute is intangible, well, and impersonal, and everything is a manifestation of that, then Krishna is also a manifestation of that. And therefore, Krishna says, mudho yang nabijanati. The mudhas, they're fools because of not recognizing Krishna's superiority. It's not just the impersonal perspective, is not just another perspective, but it is the denial of Krishna's form is an incorrect perspective. They perceive the absolute as impersonal, but that's incomplete and therefore imperfect. Agrahya, more about agrahya. There's always more to say. Even though he cannot be grasped or understood, that doesn't mean that cannot be discussed. So the very fact that topics of Krishna can be discussed means that at least there's some level of understanding. That's for the devotees. Now, devotees can understand Krishna. Otherwise, he is avam, manasa, gochara, beyond the scope of words and mind. One derogatory term in Indian culture, that it's, I don't know if it's true Vedic culture, but aspriśya means untouchable. This Sanatana Goswami and Rupa and Sanatana used to describe themselves aspriśya, adrishya. We should not be touched, we should not be seen. But Krishna is also, according to this name, agrahya, untouchable. But from a different perspective, those who are untouchable, well, actually that means the people who deal in dead bodies, like they carry dead bodies to the grave, or they eat dead bodies, or they take the skins from dead bodies of animals. So such persons are untouchable by other persons who have to worship the deities. It's an understandable principle, it's not. There is a social stigma connected with that, but the basic principle is understandable. So such persons, they are not fit to be touched, but Krishna's untouchability is run the other way, that we are not fit to touch him. So he's at the other end of the spectrum, untouchable. But actually, Krishna wants us to touch him, to kiss him, to caress him, to massage him according to our relationship with him. However, only the devotees are fit to do that. The non-devotees are not fit to do that. Yeyatamam prapadyante tam taiva bhajamyaham. Do you need something, Maharaj?
No. Krishna reciprocates. If people don't, if the non-devotees, they don't want to touch Krishna. They're not inspired by hearing about the pastimes of Krishna. We talk about all the pious people in India, but you get some of the most impious people also. So, had the experience of attempting, well, I remember one time, it was many years ago, 1970s, bringing books to one university professor, this Srimad Bhagavatam said, and he reacted in such a scornful manner. Oh, what's this? This is just all stories, fairy tales. The fact that all the great acharyas and Vyasadeva himself, the great acharyas, they honor this, they worship this, they spend years writing commentaries on this, explaining all the philosophical points. He just dismissed it. Demon. Learned demon. A snake with a jewel on his head. More dangerous. So, they do not want to be with Krishna. To wrestle with Krishna. That's another way of grasping him. Chanaran was... He wrestled with Krishna, but Krishna's cowherd boyfriends, they also wrestle with him. But there's a difference. One is doing so with the play sports, and the other is doing with the intention to kill. Such a nasty intention. So the non-devotees, well, in some cases, Krishna is very merciful, as in the case of Putana. Krishna touched her, or she. That's because in a previous life she had some little desire. I think this must be in Garga Sanhita's descriptions. In a previous life, Ratnamala, her name was. She was the sister of Bali Maharaj. And when she first saw Vamana, she thought, oh, what a nice little boy. And her motherly feelings arose within her heart. And she thought, how fortunate is the mother who suckles this boy. I would like to also suckle him. But then when she saw he was actually Vishnu, the enemy of the, at least the demons consider them to be his enemy, then her, because she's demon, she's sister of Bali Maharaj, means Bali Maharaj was the king of the demons, so you're surrounded by demons. And then she had a very nasty feeling that she wanted to kill him. So in the next life as Putana, the same Vamana, still very small, Krishna, just born, she fulfilled both desires. Of course you can't kill Krishna, but she did her best. So she got to touch Krishna. Chanara, the wrestler, got to touch Krishna. So Krishna is kind to such demons. He delivers them from material existence by letting them interact with him. But the Mayavadis, they're less fortunate. By their attitude, they completely cut themselves off from any desire to see Krishna, touch Krishna, taste Krishna. So they are worse. That's stated in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat also, similar, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, they visited the house of a sannyasi. Sannyasis don't have houses, generally, but he had a house and he had a wife. Sannyasis don't have wives. And he had wine. Sannyasis don't have wine. He was an unusual sannyasi. So, they took some fruit there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda. And then when the sannyasi offered to bring some ananda, Nityananda knew what was going on because he has already traveled all over the world and he's experienced, worldly wise, whereas his friend Nimai was just a provincial young boy. So when the sannyasi offered to bring wine, or to bring Ananda, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what do you mean, what's he talking about? And Nityananda said, he's going to bring some wine. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ran out, jumped in the Ganga, Nityananda jumped in, and Nityananda became to get purified from such association. What would you have to do every time here in Ireland you see anyone, you'd have to jump in this lock. It's a bit impractical. Cold also. So Vrindavan Das, he comments that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he showed mercy to this sannyasi, or excuse for a sannyasi, and he's breaking every single principle of sannyasi and yet calling himself a sannyasi. But if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed mercy to him, he showed mercy to the, in another incident, they're all the drunkards. They're all, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan party went by, they were all came out of their bar and they were, they're all enjoying the fun and dancing. So Vrindavan Das comments that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed mercy to such people, but he was very, such mercy he didn't give to the Mayavadis. He didn't want to eat with them. He didn't show any, of course eventually he showed them mercy, but they had to change their attitude before he agreed to eat with them. Otherwise he was avoiding them. Because they avoid him. So yayatamam prapadyante. The Mayavadis, they neither desire nor do they deserve to touch Krishna. But for the Krishna so much wants to touch us, to be with us. Although we cannot grasp him, he wants to grab us. Therefore he sends his representatives. He personally comes. When he comes in this world, he interacts with all kinds of people. Krishna, on the pretext of his pastimes, he traveled widely in India, and even to, he went to the depths of the ocean, he went to the place of Yamaraj, he went to the heavenly planets, he went to Mahavishnu, he went to the place of Varuna, he traveled extensively all over different parts of India, and the parts he didn't go to, Balaram went to. So in this way, of course, he'd be traveling by road and all the people would come out and take darshan, and in this way he was merciful. Along the way he would naturally would stop and take water and then exchange some words, and so many people got to interact with Krishna. So Krishna is very eager to bring us to him, and even people who are newly in devotion, who have not attained their position in the spiritual world, even such people, Krishna, such the devotees, they've taken up devotional service. So even such devotees, Krishna makes himself available to be touched, to be dressed, to be fed, for garlands to be made, all these different services in the form of the deity. And even one of the regulated principles mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion is that one should touch the deity. And that's particularly for the pujaris. That's stated in the commentary. They can place their head at the lotus feet of the deity. Generally one is not allowed to touch the deity, only those who are duly initiated, Brahmin initiated. But in Pandharpur, in Maharashtra, there's the system, the deity is there, Panduranga. And everyone comes and places there, every visitor, and there's thousands and thousands every day, they can place their head on the feet of this deity. So Krishna is very merciful like that. And even if we are not initiated, Brahmin initiated, to touch the deity. There are so many rules and regulations in deity worship. So we can touch Krishna in the form of sound by chanting his names, which is not, the name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. So when we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna is dancing on our tongue. So Krishna is so kind, even though he is agrahya, he is not to be perceived sensually, he makes himself available to his devotee. Even to people who are just beginning to take up a little devotion, Krishna gives himself so liberally. As Srila Prabhupada used to say, if we make one step toward Krishna, Krishna will take 10 steps toward us. But we have to make a step. So there's a few more words on agrahya.